The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent, including Olas Media.
Olas Media. Olas Media presents Nation State of Play.
Welcome to the Nation State of Play podcast. I'm your host, Brian Miller. On each episode, we explore the political stories that are driving public policy in California. We explore these stories with political insiders, business leaders, journalists, and policymakers themselves to get below the surface of the headlines and show you the true forces shaping our nation state. All right, well, thanks for listening today. Our guest for the second time in a few weeks is Shannon Olivier Harris, who runs NARAL here in California. Really excited to have Shannon back because there is no hotter topic in the country right now than what is going on with abortion and the pro-choice fights across the country. And you know, we had Shannon on a few weeks ago to talk about their legislative priorities in the session and really kept the episode focused on that. But this is a very different episode. We are talking about politics. We're talking about the campaigns and how the Dobbs decision overruling Roe v. Wade is really impacting elections across California and across the country. So I was grateful that she was willing to come back, do a deep dive on what she's seeing on the front lines of the politics of these issues. And we have a discussion really starting with the national environment, but then zeroing in on some key California races. So really important episode. I hope you will listen. So stay with us. It's Shannon Olivier Harris right after this.
American democracy is good, but we can make it better. The National Association of Nonpartisan Reformers includes organizations across the country that are working right now to build a better democracy by opening primaries, implementing safe, secure voting systems, reducing corruption, and increasing transparency. Listen to our weekly podcast, How to Win Friends and Save the Republic, to hear the latest updates from the democracy reform space. Subscribe and learn more about us at nonpartisanreformers.org.
Welcome back to the Nation State of Play podcast. Well, Shannon, thanks so much for coming back on the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be back.
Okay, so since we talked, you guys have come out through NARAL with a series of really important congressional endorsements. And that's why we wanted to have you back on the show, primarily to talk about what's going on at the national level and how these California races in particular impact the odds of the Democrats holding the House. So could you kind of set the stage for us on where you see, let's start with the House fights at a national level and how the choice issues are impacting those.
Sure. I mean, I think the first thing is just to recognize that, like in many years, the path to holding the House runs through California. And that's true this year too. So we have some critical protect seats in Katie Porter and Mike Levin and Josh Harder. And then we have some really important flip seats. We need to unseat Mike Garcia and replace him with Christy Smith. We need to unseat Young Kim, replace her. We need to unseat Michelle Steele. And so we've endorsed Jay Chen and Dr. Asif Mahmood in those races. These folks are really horrible on reproductive freedom. I mean, their records are atrocious, from voting against the Women's Health Protection Act twice, all of them, Michelle Steele, Young Kim, and Mike Garcia. The Women's Health Protection Act, of course, being the federal legislation that would specifically really enshrine and codify the protections of Roe within our federal laws. They even all voted against the right to contraception bill in the House. So, you know, they're not really hiding their cards as far as their positions when it comes to reproductive freedom. But one of the things that I think is really interesting is, of course, they're trying to. If you look at their websites, none of these folks actually indicate that they their position on reproductive freedom. They are trying to hide just how extreme they are. And that's because they know that voters are wildly opposed to their positions as it relates to reproductive freedom.
So yeah, I mean, that's such a good point. There's this weird cognitive dissonance between what they know is actually politics in their district that can help them manage through the cycle, and then how they continue to vote. How do you explain that? I mean, the right to contraception seems just like such an extreme vote to take, and these are all people in tough races. What do you, how do you see that political calculus in their heads?
You know, it's interesting, right? Because what we've known is that they never, the anti-choice machine, they are this very small minority of folks in the country, but they are, you know, they are well-powered, they have good money. And they have really been driving this very extreme agenda, and they never intended to stop at Roe. That's what we've known for a very long time, is that Roe was really just the beginning for them. And what they are trying to do is actually a nationwide abortion ban. So it's interesting, right? Michelle Steele and Mike Garcia, they are also co-sponsors of the Life at Conception Act. And this would be a nationwide abortion ban, where we are actually talking about essentially outlawing abortion at 0 weeks, nothing, right? Which would have implications for birth control, which would have implications for IVF, would be very, very problematic for a lot of issues as it relates to reproductive freedom. And so these folks are just as extreme as it comes. And it is because, you know, the anti-choice movement is really driving them in that direction, even as the Republican Party as an institution is trying to kind of pull that back, especially now that Roe has fallen, because they have seen what we have been saying all along, which is reproductive freedom is wildly popular. 8 in 10 Americans support the legal right to abortion, regardless of whether they would choose abortion for themselves. It is wildly, wildly popular. And so they are trying to back off of this position as a party, even as legislatively, they are still driving that extreme agenda. So it really is this extraordinary contradiction that we are seeing. And we can't be fooled. You know, we're seeing it in some of our state legislative races too. Suzette Valladares is basically trying to act like the assemblywoman, she's trying to act like she's basically a moderate Democrat in that district where she's running against Pilar Shaivo, who we've endorsed. I mean, this is insane. Suzette has a horrible record. Our scorecard's going to come out in the next couple of weeks, and she will be earning a beautiful F with us, a big, big F. But she's trying to back off the issue. So we just saw this last week. Senator Lindsey Graham introduces a nationwide abortion ban. And, you know, the party, Mitch McConnell even, they immediately back off of it because they know that this is political suicide for them, even as they are that extreme on the issue. What we need to understand is that, and what Kansas showed us with that ballot initiative, this has never been for the people. This is not a partisan issue. You know, obviously for Democrats, overwhelming majorities of Democrats support reproductive freedom. That's true as well for independents. And then even for Republicans, significant numbers of Republicans support reproductive freedom. And so the Republican Party is really out of step with where public opinion is. And people who identify as Republican are supporting these candidates and elected officials in many instances in spite of their records on reproductive freedom, not because of them.
I'm glad you brought up the Lindsey Graham thing, because I think this is a really hard thing to understand politically, because like you said, it didn't seem like McConnell and him were at the same meeting on whatever strategy that they were pursuing on this. McConnell seems like he wants to kind of, you know, avoid this issue. And then Graham comes out and does this. I heard various different explanations for this. The only one that made any sense to me, and I'm definitely curious as to your take, is that this was Graham basically saying, we've lost the middle. Like, he had seen the results from the special elections in Kansas, and all we can do at this point is play to the base. It's essentially a play to just seed the middle. And there's a ton of energy on the progressive side because of this, and we've got to get our energy up on the right. That's at least rational to me. I don't know that you need a rational reason to ascribe to Lindsey Graham these days, but what's your take on this?
Sure. I mean, historically, the Republican Party has really used this issue and being so extreme as it relates to reproductive freedom, to, you know, to where they do oppose birth control, or to where they do oppose abortion at any stage, where they support these abortion bans without any exceptions. They have used that to rally their base. And so, sure, I think that he is trying to do the same thing here in all likelihood, though I would never try to say that I understand what's going on in the head of Lindsey Graham. But with that said, it is so, again, out of touch with the overall political winds and shifts here, right? Where the Republican institution and Mitch McConnell being at the helm of that, he knows this is not a winning issue for us. We are in trouble after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. The people in this country are livid about that. They do not want their fundamental freedoms taken away. We need to not talk about this issue at all. So that's where he seems to be coming from. And clearly that's the direction that all of these congressional, you know, elected officials running for re-election, they are getting that message too. Don't talk about it. Pretend like this issue does not exist. And fortunately, the Democrats on the other side are seizing on that. And they are calling out these incumbents for their, you know, just, I mean, these track records that are so archaic, right? You're going to do away with birth control? You don't believe in the right to birth control? I mean, that is, birth control is popular with 95% of the American people. What are the, you know, so really it is so inconsistent with where the people are.
I do think you saw the ultimate intentions, as you're saying here. But back to your this discussion about, well, like rallying the base. If overturning Roe doesn't rally your base, what is? I mean, are you know, a national? Is the analysis on their side something like, well, overturning Roe is not enough. We actually have to pass a national ban, and somehow that's going to increase the base. You can't be particularly concerned that that's going to work, right?
I mean, they are always going, you know, there's going to be 20% of the country who maybe will consistently be where Lindsey Graham is, but that's it. You know, the vast majority, 8 in 10 Americans that support the legal right to abortion, the vast majority that did not want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. You know, so it's a very small base that he can talk about rallying, but sure, it seems like he's trying to reclaim the issue on their end. It just doesn't line up though. What we've seen is that the fact that Roe was overturned has been super galvanizing for Democratic voters, for independent voters who are coming out, women in particular, registering to vote in droves all across this country. You know, the nonpartisan, the independent vote in the Kansas ballot initiative, you know, to ensure that the state legislature in Kansas cannot put into effect an abortion ban there, was a significant reason for why that ballot initiative was successful. You know, the No campaign was successful in defeating that, and the independent vote. It's a closed primary in Kansas. The only reason that they could, the only thing they could vote on that ballot was the issue of abortion. So they came out just to vote on that. And that's the kind of thing that we're seeing is people ahead of what we are calling Rovember are really getting mobilized. When they learn that abortion is on the ballot in California with Proposition 1, we are seeing enthusiasm to turn out and vote this election out the roof. You know, it is going up substantially, exponentially.
So yeah, that's exactly what I want to talk about. But to your point about these extreme votes that the competitive House members are continuing to take, even in this environment, why do you think McCarthy won't let them off the hook on those votes? You know, they're in races he really needs if he wants to be speaker. Why won't he just give him a free pass? I mean, Nancy Pelosi gives free passes all the time to Democrats and conservative districts on tough votes. However many votes she has to deal with, that's exactly how many she gives out, of course. But why do you, that's what I can't quite figure out. It's like why McCarthy wouldn't let a California Republican in his own backyard in a competitive seat vote for the right to birth control? What's going on there?
What I think it actually shows us is the true colors of these Congress members, that it is actually their position. They have adopted the position of the very extreme anti-choice mechanism in this country. And like I said, they never intended to stop at Roe. They want to see a nationwide abortion ban. They want to see us roll back these fundamental freedoms and really put women into a second-class citizen, strata. And so I think that what we're seeing is not that McCarthy won't give them a pass. I think we see their true colors. And that is what, you know, that is what the congressional candidates that we're supporting here in California, Christy Smith and the others, are really highlighting in this is, do not be fooled by Mike Garcia, who's trying to dodge this issue. He is as extreme as they come on this issue. And he's not only coming after our right to access abortion care, he's coming after your right to contraception. He's coming after your right to IVF. He's coming after your right to make personal decisions about your body, your life, and your future, and your family. And we need to be unequivocal that that is who these people are. And that's, you know, that is why we are so invested in these congressional flips that I mentioned, those three races.
Yeah, and it seems to me that the Graham thing must really help you articulate the urgency of these races, right? Because a couple of weeks ago, the discussion was all about like, okay, well, this is the decision, but nothing's gonna happen here in California. And then I've heard a lot of people dismiss Prop 1 as basically saying, oh, it's just a way to get Democratic turnout up and, you know, nothing's actually gonna change here. But then Graham introduces the bill and you start to think, wow, this is actually not that crazy, right? Because both houses are very close in terms of numbers, and McConnell would certainly, you know, remove the filibuster at will if, you know, as he's done in the past, would change the rules as he needed. So how are you finding that Graham introduction? It kind of changes the dynamic of people saying, oh no, it really does matter who's in control of the House.
Right. I mean, I want to zoom out for a second here and then zoom in. So one thing is, we actually have an opportunity with this election, with Roe-vember coming up, and of course, ballots drop here in 2 weeks, basically. So coming up very quickly. We have an opportunity to not only hold the House, but to gain ground in the Senate. And if we're able to do that, just 2 additional U.S. Senate seats and keep the House, we have an opportunity to actually pass the Women's Health Protection Act. They would be willing to suspend the filibuster rule and actually cast a vote on the Women's Health Protection Act, enshrining a federal protection to the right to abortion in this country. And President Biden has already said that he would sign that. That would be obviously a fundamental game changer, because we are talking about 14 states already that have total abortion bans in effect, total or very, very extreme bans on abortion in effect, and other states that have tried and continue to try to put bans into effect, but where that ban is going back and forth in the courts, right? And it's a constantly changing landscape on the national scale, creating incredible uncertainty and chaos, really, for people who need to access care, and a lot of fear about how to do that and where to do that safely. So we have, you know, this election comes with just incredible national consequences, and you could go state by state and really interrogate what that looks like. In Michigan, abortion is on the ballot. They are doing what we are doing, a proactive ballot measure to protect the right to abortion. Their governor is also up for re-election. And if we're able to protect Governor Whitmer, if we're able to pass the ballot initiative in Michigan, that would be a game changer for whether abortion care continues to be protected in Michigan. Similarly, in Arizona, where there is a ban that is threatening, we have an opportunity to actually flip their state legislative, both bodies of their state legislature, and there's an open governor's race. And the implications for Arizona on California cannot be overstated, because if Arizona has a ban in effect already, because there's so much uncertainty about ability to get care and what the legal landscape in Arizona is, already California is seeing a huge influx in out-of-state patients coming from Arizona, in Imperial and San Diego counties in particular, and LA as well. So if we change the political makeup in Arizona, we could actually take steps to protect abortion care there. Again, with the reverberations into California being significant, and of course, for Arizonans actually protecting them rather than what is now this extraordinarily chaotic environment. So I want to talk about the grand scheme of things first. The next thing, as far as looking really specifically at California, we need to remember that our protections around abortion are subject to who is in political power. So we have state protections in our state laws, but if our state legislature changes, if the composition of that changes, then that can have, right? That could change. They could change our state laws. If the governor changes, that could change our state laws. And our state constitution, we have the right to abortion, is embedded in our right to privacy that was founded by our California Supreme Court. Well, again, the governor changes and whoever they're appointing to the Supreme Court, the composition there changes, right? It's the same thing that we're seeing on the federal scale. We thought that things were safe with Roe v. Wade because it was passed 50 years ago, because the Supreme Court held that we had the right to abortion 50 years ago, but the composition of a court can change. So passing Proposition 1 is the best thing that we can do to insulate the protection of abortion and the protection for contraception from any political shifts. It is the single most powerful and important thing that we can do to ensure that the right to abortion and the right to contraception is actually truly protected in California for generations to come. We need to not be short-sighted or have a short memory about how easy it is for the political winds to shift in any given state. We think of California as blue, blue, blue. It has not always been that way. We are the state of Reagan. We need to remember our roots and that things change over decades. So even though we have a moment right now with a super majority of folks in the state legislature who support reproductive freedom and a real reproductive freedom champion in Governor Newsom, that is temporary and that may not be what California looks like forever. So California voters must enshrine this right in a much more permanent fashion.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. You know, we've talked about this on the show in different contexts with different issues before. We had Jim Newton on the show who wrote Jerry Brown's biography, and I'd certainly recommend it to anybody who hasn't read it. It's kind of the modern political history of California. And, you know, he makes the same point that you did, which is, you know, California is actually on a lot of issues a fairly conservative place. We had sort of an aggressive law and order period in the 90s. And for, most of California's history, actually, our Latino population generally voted Republican, and then the Republican Party, this is back to Pete Wilson days and, you know, all kinds of racist stuff that was pushed. They pushed a generation of Latinos away from the party, but it didn't have to turn out that way. And we've had Mike Madrid and others talking about the sort of swings, particularly in the Latino vote, which is the plurality of California. So I do think it's hard to, as you said, sort of remember that in the context of like the current California and the place that we think we know politically, but things can change. And traditionally it has, we've had these swings.
The other thing I want people thinking about is, I feel like I'm saying this ad nauseum, but I really think it's an important point that California's role in the fight for reproductive freedom has truly never been more important than in this moment in history. And what I mean by that is, even before the fall of Roe, about a quarter of all healthcare facilities that provide abortion care in the country were based in California. Before the fall of Roe, 25% roughly. Now, as providers are forced to stop providing abortion care in states all across the country, that percentage is going up exponentially. The role that California plays in actually helping people access care is extraordinary. It was before the fall of Roe. Now it is just increasing that much more. So in a few ways, one, in actually helping people access the care that they need, California plays a really important role. We cannot forget that. We have to ensure that these rights are protected here in a permanent fashion. Again, reinforcing why Proposition 1 is so, so, so important. Another reason we are so important for the country is that we are, the work that we've done through the California Future Abortion Council truly does lay out a blueprint for states like California who want to, you know, be these reproductive freedom states, be these safe places for anybody who needs to access care. And the work that we're doing here and the model that we're setting for the country, we actually, it's not even that it's incumbent upon us to be that model, but it's also just literally, it's already what we're doing. And so the role that we have, and for people to sort of dismiss in California, we're safe, that's actually, it misses the point. It really misses the point about what we have to be doing here. It's not enough for us to just have these sort of baseline protections. Our role is way more significant than that.
Yeah, great point. But back to Amendment 1, and I'm not asking you for legal constitutional analysis here, but no one's suggesting that Amendment 1, even if it passes, and we certainly hope that it will, would overrule a federal congressional ban on abortion, right? So just to be clear, that's just the maximum we can do at the state level. But if Lindsey Graham has his way, that would overrule Amendment 1, right?
That's right. I mean, it is the strongest thing that we can do at the state level to protect care. If a nationwide abortion ban were enacted, we would be subject to that like any other state. Again, this passing Proposition 1 would give the Attorney General in California an additional tool, and frankly, the strongest tool possible to fight any measure of abortion, of nationwide abortion ban. So that is another consideration.
Yeah, and I don't want to get distracted on this sort of a quixotic legal argument I heard the other day, but it was interesting, which is, well, okay, let's just imagine the worst case happens and we have Amendment 1, or we have the current state, which is still a right to privacy grounded in the California Constitution, and then that conflicts with federal law. I mean, there would be court challenges, right? And that would ultimately theoretically get to the Supreme Court. And I suppose our argument would be, and I don't want to be a lawyer here, I'm a reformed self-hating lawyer, but the argument would be that the feds never had any jurisdiction over abortion, and that Lindsey Graham's bill was unconstitutional because it doesn't impact the Commerce Clause, or maybe we write our state law in a way that federal jurisdiction isn't implicated. Ironically, you'd think that the conservatives would be most attracted to that argument because they tend to be the ones for less limited federal power, supposedly. But anyway, I just stick that as like a post-it note, like off to the side of like, I've heard, I think maybe too much of this discussion in cable news and other places of like, maybe that wouldn't be the end of the road. But like, I think what the main thing people really need to take away here is if the federal ban passes, in all likelihood, that would stick nationwide. And you know I guess what we're saying is the two most important things we can do are, yes, pass Amendment 1, but maybe even at a higher level, win these California House seats, which are likely to determine the outcome of who controls the House. We have more, I think we certainly have more competitive House seats than any state in the country. That must be true, just given what's going on in Southern California, right?
Yeah, I don't know the exact numbers, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's true. We have, I think there are 10 congressional seats here that are in play, which is, I would imagine, more than in any other state. And holding the House, obviously, if we gain ground in the Senate, but we lose the House, then we've gone nowhere, and we can do nothing to try to provide additional protections for people in this country. So we have our work cut out for us. But again, what we know is, thankfully, Democrats really are recognizing that that reproductive freedom is a winning issue, and they are running on this issue front and center in their campaigns. And that is something we're really thrilled to see, but it's also smart because this is the number one issue for so many voters in this country right now.
Do you think there's an understated number of even Republican voters in polling who are either going to stay home or vote Democratic this time based on this issue? I've heard this argument that it's sort of like the reverse Trump phenomenon of like, you know, after this particular Republican women, well, it's not cool in places I run in to say that I'm going to vote Democratic, but this is too much for me. And when I'm alone with my ballot, that's what I'm going to do. Or maybe I'm just not going to vote at all because I'm just appalled by the whole process. You think that's possible?
Absolutely. It's something we're already seeing on the doors, actually. We have one of our activists in Christy Smith's district who, going door to door, has met Republican voters who have said, you know, I've been a longtime conservative. I've always voted Republican. In this election, I will not be. I will be voting for the Democrat. It is because of this issue. The Republican Party has gone too far. Like I said, they're overturning Roe is wildly unpopular. People are livid about that across the board. Then they're going further. They've shown their cards in so many different ways, from the actual Supreme Court opinion, right? Speaking to coming after contraception, gay marriage, you know, civil rights issues. I mean, so much that's on the table. And then, you know, Lindsey Graham coming out and actually introducing a nationwide ban, no less what we talked about at the outset, which is that when contraception bills have been brought before the House, these same, you know, congressional Republicans are voting against contraception. So it's interesting because they've been so transparent, right? They're really showing where they stand. And in spite of the fact that they're seeing and their, you know, political advisors know that it is really unwise of them to do that.
Yeah, I think the reason I'm struggling with all this is, like, you're saying believe politicians, take them at their word, and I just assume all politicians are lying, but you're probably right. So I understand. I guess the old saying is when people show you who they are, listen, and they're just taking a clean vote, but, you know, you got to take them at their word. It's sort of the Clarence Thomas thing in Dobbs. I mean, he's the only one who's honest. I mean, he's just like, hey, it all needs to go. Not just if we're done with this, we're done with gay marriage, we're done with contraception. I thought this was all stupid in the first place. And, you know, I guess that's what we're saying is kind of like, take it on its face. Don't overthink it.
Well, and doesn't it hearken to Donald Trump? I mean, people didn't take him seriously. And that's why we got into that predicament in the first place. We didn't believe that he was going to have it be a litmus test for any nominee to the Supreme Court that they agree to overturn Roe v. Wade. Then even after they get confirmed onto the court, the American, you know, there's still this feeling of, well, they're not really going to overturn Roe. 50 years of precedent, of course they're not going to do that. They said in their hearings in front of the Senate that they wouldn't, you know, they respect precedent and all of these things. And when somebody shows you who they are, you need to believe them. And I don't think that they're really pulling a fast one on anybody in this election. That is what is the overarching point, right? That, you know, Michelle Steele and Young Kim and Mike Garcia and other congressional Republicans across the country, they can try to hide their records on reproductive freedom, but they are out there and they are very bad and they can't hide from that.
Yeah, I love this idea. This is a concept in fiction writing I've heard before, is like sometimes the facts, the actual facts, are so crazy that people won't believe them. They're like hard to sell. And I saw a writer one time who wrote, he was talking about Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and he actually took out this incredible scene, which was completely true, because all of his editors are like, nobody's ever going to believe it. You just gotta leave it out. And he's like, but that happened. And they're like, it doesn't matter. And so that's kind of how I feel about the contraception vote, right? I mean, it's like, if I said that to Republicans, I know, I don't think they would believe me. You'd have to like show them the vote. And even then they would just be like, fake news, whatever, right? It's just, it's so crazy that it's maybe it's hard to convince people on this, but you've been talking about these races. Are there any that you didn't get to mention that you want to highlight, particularly in California here, of key races? We've definitely seen some more kind of get interesting over the last few weeks as these trends have materialized. So yeah, any more you want to highlight?
I mean, I think certainly from a congressional perspective, those six races that I mentioned are our top priorities. And then of course, as you know, 30% of the state legislature is open. And so we are doing a ton of work to ensure that those seats are actually filled by champions for reproductive freedom. We'll be putting out our legislative scorecard in about 2 weeks, and we'll be putting out our voter guide the week after that. And we are just, I mean, we are leaving it all on the field this year to ensure that, you know, we pass Proposition 1 and that we send a resounding message to the country about support for abortion and contraception. And, you know, we are doing everything in our power to ensure that we can hold the House through California and have a state legislature that really continues to reflect the values of Californians.
So, that was great. I really appreciate all of the info. I certainly appreciate you coming back. If people want to help, obviously they can go to these campaigns directly, but if they want to help through one central source, through you and your organization, what's the best way to get involved?
Yeah, I mean, go to our website. You can sign up to be a member and a volunteer with NARAL Pro-Choice California. That's the best thing to get involved with our organization. You can follow us on all of our channels at Pro-Choice CA on social media. And then one thing I want people to know and also share about is one of the bills that we worked on this year created a state website, kind of a one-stop shop for information about abortion care and how to access abortion care in California. And that website just recently became live. It's abortion.ca.gov. I would encourage folks to check that out and also to share it with your networks. Make sure that people know that this is a resource for Californians and for anybody who might need to access care here from out of state. One of the things I love that the governor recently did is he actually put up billboards in 7 states that have enacted extreme bans on abortion. And those billboards, you know, they say things like, Texas doesn't own your body, you do. Need help? Here's the California website, abortion.ca.gov. And it is horrible that we have to do that kind of thing, but it is also really important that anybody who is in despair in this country knows that they have a safe place. They have a state that will, and several of us, California is not alone, several of us that are really looking out for them and will do our best to provide care that people need. So yes, I would encourage folks, we are less than 50 days out from the election. If you're not involved in this election yet, this is the Roe-vember election. We need to do everything we can to ensure that we are protecting people's reproductive freedoms. Abortion is literally on the ballot in California and in many states through the elected officials that we are putting into office and in a few instances with actual ballot initiatives. So this is the moment. If you've been sitting on the sidelines, this is the moment to get involved.
Well, Shannon, thanks so much for coming. Appreciate everything you're doing, and we will help get this message out live and far. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
We invite you to share ideas for guests, ask questions, and leave comments. You can find us at NeptuneOps.com. Follow us and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts as we continue to explore the inside stories driving California politics. This is the Nation State of Play podcast. I'm your host, Brian Miller, and thank you for listening.
Olas Media.